usual as sense much as about, make will podcast hold this wishes popular to contrary. I'm Paul Hudson.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Cy Commanders.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
And in this podcast, we're talking Ubuntu, surprise, surprise, and some Novell, with a bit of Sony in there as well. A little bit of Emacs, as we report back on the You Dare Us from 2 weeks ago.
Emacs.
Don't look quite so sad, lads. And, of course, Discovery of the Week and other favourite sections, and maybe even, I think it's Mike's turn for the hot seat, isn't it?
Is it already?
I think it might be.
No.
That means it's been 8 weeks.
Eight weeks.
We could just copy and paste the last one, though, couldn't we?
CPIO, then,
Mike. I still hate it, so...
And now we have, of course, a new subscriptions deal, and you should be very sad because not as good as the old subscriptions deal. We did warn you, losers, if you missed out, you missed out. It's too late. The new deal isn't quite as good, but you can still subscribe to the Linux format. It's still not a bad deal.
It's still worth it.
At tinyurl.com/podcastlxf.
And now it's time for the news. It's been a very quiet 2 weeks. The best we could come up with was Ubuntu 10.10 is using base 10 for something.
It's quite fitting, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Like they just love the tens.
I really have absolutely no idea what it's about.
Base 10.
Base 10.
So, and what else is in the news, Graham?
Oh.
What is base 10? Well, base 10? How many fingers have you got? Remember the school, the tens, the units, the hundreds.
How was it using base 10?
Well, what were they using
specifically?
Before, they were using base 10.
Well, they were using base 2. How many bytes are in a kilobyte?
Oh, it's like 1,080 or something.
Oh, I
isn't
see.
It?
No, it's 1,024.
Oh, well, fine.
But that
Fool.
Should be a kibibyte.
There we go. Kibibyte, yeah. For the by being binary, because it comes from base 2. Binary.
So we've been using these numbers for so long, megabyte and kilobyte and gigabyte, but they're not actually representing these multiplications of 10 and hundreds and thousands, like they should be.
Yeah, kilo everywhere else means 1,000.
Yeah, we should have been using kibby, mebby, and gibby. They sound silly, so that's why nobody's done it.
That's why my spectrum had 512K rather than 500K, like a nice round number.
Exactly.
That's a pretty cool spectrum if it did have 512K. Well, awesome. Half a mega RAM.
4,096 megs and a 4 gigs of RAM. That's how we think nowadays. It's everywhere. You look at it, like, you know, a number of colours. I think in ham mode in the Amiga was 4,096.
Well, of course, yes.
For example.
Yeah.
Yeah. All adds up, you see.
So is it going to be called... Are they going to be called Buntu Bytes or something like that to mark the branding?
Nice. Buntu Bytes. Yeah.
It matches not only what hard drive Mick has been doing for years, which is why you buy a 1 tera hard drive, it's actually only got 900 gigs, sorry. And the problem is the gap gets bigger the more you add to it. So when we talk about petabyte hard drives, you're actually losing terabytes of data, which is quite annoying.
But is that more significant, or is it just
obviously you think the same amount of data you're lost, but it's still very annoying. That's all going to change. And actually, I think Snow Leopard for Apple also has base 10.
Well, this is it. One of the developers who put forward this idea has got a lot of flack, people saying, oh, you're following Apple or you're changing the policy. But he made it very clear. He said, we didn't change the units policy. There was no such policy. We've just created one. So, you know, they're going to try and standardise the software going forward.
So they're standardising on something that's right and accurate.
Yeah, they're standardising
they are standardising on something that's accurate. It doesn't mean it's right. Because I come from Britain, we want imperial units for our binaries thing. So I want to see 1,212 kilobytes in a megabyte, then 4,192 megabytes in a gigabyte, and like that. I want to see that. I want furlongs too.
It certainly
I want kilo furlongs and mega furlongs.
It'd raise the barrier, wouldn't it, to computer entry? We could probably make more magazines if we did that.
It'd keep the peons out, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, too right.
Right, and we'll move on to the next story, as we seem to have overbaked that one. Novell, for the last few weeks, there's been all kinds of rumours that Novell might be being taken over, or there's going to be some kind of hostile takeover bid by buying all the shares, and those rumours aren't going away.
Well, yeah, it was...
Dal McBride's going to buy it, isn't he?
Bill Cates, yeah, that would work.
Elliott Associates,
an
investment company, offered $1 billion in cash.
Wow.
Elliott Associates already own about 8% of Novell anyway.
Right.
But they've put forward this amount of money, and then Novell said it was inadequate. Because I think Novell, they already got $1 billion in cash sitting around.
They've got a large chunk in the bank, yes.
Right.
But they're losing money.
Right. So now's the time.
Liability. So what any smart investor would do is buy up Novell, keep the cash, obviously.
Yeah.
Flog off the bits that are absolute rubbish, which is, let's face it, most of Novell, and keep the remainder.
Do they still have NetWare?
They still have network.
Yeah.
Wow.
They still have SUSE, obviously. SUSE is one of the most important
SUSE's
parts.
SUSE's great,
actually.
Yeah.
SUSE's the valuable part of Novell.
Yeah, yeah.
The bit that's actually worth a lot of money. And actually, in a way, that might be the bit they try and sell. Sell that to raise a big chunk of cash to turn around network business, which isn't going to work, clearly.
It's a little bit like, it feels a little bit like Sun to me, because Novell made all of its money, like, in the last decade or two decades, or 15 years ago, has been sitting on top of all that money, been looking at open source for innovation, but still hasn't quite been able to pull it off or jump off the last step of the old part of its ecosystem. So it wouldn't surprise me if somebody comes along and...
Well, speaking of Sun, when you try and download Solaris now, it does say this is a 90-day download trial only.
No really? Way.
Seriously, yeah.
No,
the license is still the Sun's CDDL, license. It's still that, but there's text up there now, so I think they're edging towards closed sourcing Solaris again.
Right.
Well, they're selling support again, aren't they now?
Yeah.
I mean, tightly. Yeah. Oh, yes, and the next news article.
This is something I know about.
This is Linux support being dropped from Sony's PlayStation 3 console. Now, there hasn't been the option to install Linux on any of the Slim devices, but apparently Sony's next firmware update for the PlayStation 3 is going to remove the facility from fat PlayStations that currently have it. And that means if you have a Linux distribution installed on your PS3, it's going to be removed along with all the data and the ability to use it. I think it's really bad. Apart from the fact that there are thousands of people using them in research centres and universities and the American military, I think, you know, it's removing a major feature and a big reason why a lot of us bought it.
Have they given any reason for this then? Have they said it's to do with because they don't like piracy?
Well, I think it looks like security. I mean, their security rather than the user security, because there is allegedly a hacker that's been able to get into through the hypervisor and everything in the other OS mode on the PlayStation is protected by a hypervisor. You can't really get down to the hardware. But somebody has been able to do it, and they've done it through installing Linux. So it seems likely that Sony are closing this door to try and stop any further compromises being made through what they see as an open door.
Well, it's really sad, too, because people don't, you know, when they want to buy enterprise uses of these things to do research, they don't say, oh, I'll pop down to Dixon's and pick me up three of those things, please. They just buy 2,000.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be a major cash cow for Sony to make some money, because it's a seriously powerful computing machine.
But you can use these machines for crunching lots of numbers, but at the same time, they're still locked down for non-official developers. Is it just the graphics side you can't
No, you
use?
Can. No, it's open. The APIs for getting at the cell architecture are open, and they are quite accessible, and I can't remember it's something like 150 gigaflops or something like that in terms of in what you can get out of the cell, which
that's even with it being limited. You only get 5 SPUs, don't you? On the cell on Linux.
And whereas an $8,000 or $9,000 cell architecture machine might give you 200-250 gigaflops.
Right.
So it's very good, but I mean, Sony must still be making a loss on these PlayStation 3s, so maybe they wouldn't be making any money from the US government buying
because they're not buying any games after.
Lost leader on the hardware, which is a shame. I said to Graham yesterday, if they just strip the Blu-ray drive out, because these guys don't want Blu-rays times 2000, they just want a CPU, basically a very fast CPU with obviously a GPU as well, give them a modified firmware that opens up the entire device. There's no PS3 firmware at all, you can't run PS3 games. Just let them have a computing device and sell it at $500, because it's the government, they'll still pay whatever you say, really. And it's still cheap for them, so why not?
Put it in a small rack.
Sony seems remarkably clueless.
I'm thinking, you know, Apple had the Mac Mini, a total desktop machine. A lot of people end up using them for servers, so they made a server version. It's a very strange machine, this tiny little server box. But, they saw the market.
Normally, in business, if there's a demand for something, you kind of, you know, do something to satisfy that demand. But no, not Sony,
Sony.
But, it's bad. It's bad because I bought it on the premise that it ran Linux, and now it doesn't.
So you're not going to do the upgrade then, the firmware upgrade?
Well, that's the other thing. I don't think your games will work, and certainly your online content won't work.
So you
basically have to choose between the two. And Linux doesn't run very well on the PlayStation, but it's cool.
Can you take it back to the shop?
Ah, because it no longer does what you bought it for.
Possibly.
Get a refund. Demand a refund from Sony.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
That's going to be quite hard to explain to the guys in PC world, isn't it? The hypervisor has been disabled on this new firmware.
But that would be a more effective way of raising awareness of Linux and stuff like that than denial of service attacks on Mac Genius bars.
And now it's time for You Dare Us. In the last 2 weeks, we've been using exclusively Emacs for all our editing of text and similar stuff.
That's GNU Emacs, by the way.
GNU/Emacs.
Yes.
Which is great, isn't it, guys? How was Emacs? Great?
I've found with Emacs, the use of the control key all the time for everything is annoying. But of course...
Oh, is that what you have to do?
Is that what C stands for?
Okay, yeah, sorry.
But of course, when Emacs was originally made, in these type of editors on those old Sun workstations, the control key was where the caps lock key was, so it was actually next to the home row. So using the control key all the time in Emacs used to be a lot more pleasurable than I found it.
Pleasurable?
usable, you know.
Silkily stroking the velvet touch of the QWERTY.
So that's what I've discovered about it.
Has it changed very much in all the years that you've been using it, do you think?
I noticed when you fire it up every single time, and the default screen has a link to the GNU/Linux debate on the GNU website. So there's still quite a bit of politics in there.
I mean, that's one of the things I found, that it's depressingly similar to the Emacs you used to be forced to use on the Amiga.
Micro Emacs.
Yeah. I mean, it's very difficult when I'm used to all the luxury of highlighted spelling and all that kind of stuff, and instantly saving a file. I found it very difficult to use, and pretty abandoned it really to do some real work.
It is a very powerful editor.
How long did it take before you abandoned it?
About an hour.
About an hour is pretty good.
Well, I did try it a few times, but yeah, as the pressure built up, I abandoned it quicker than that.
That's a lot better than me.
How did you do, Andrew?
I used it for about 2 minutes. But my fingers don't seem to bend in the right way.
That's because you don't have an old style Sun keyboard.
No. So what I want really is some sort of text editor that works without the monkey key bindings of Emacs.
Doesn't it build up quite a lot of pinky strength though, Emacs?
Well, I don't know. I can never use my pinky when I'm playing the guitar. That sort of sits there like a
that must be
child.
Hard to play some chords then, really.
Yeah. It does. I improvise, but I just can't do it. I can't type with those fingers.
But if you used Emacs more and more, you might train them.
Maybe.
You might have the strongest pinkies in the world.
Or I could just install Nano or something better.
True.
Say, aren't we running a feature on Nano soon?
Oh gosh, we are. Yeah, that's certainly.
So you had 2 minutes. How many hours did you use it for, Mike?
I was using it all morning.
All morning.
All morning. So yeah, I was
yeah,
using
Mike's
the.
Been away,
that's
yeah.
2.5 hours. That's pretty good.
I was using the psychotherapist to help me buy it. It's MX Doctor, and so I was asking it lots of questions. And one time I said, "When will the herd be ready?" And it said, "I have asked myself that question many times." But it's actually quite clever. If you type "kill myself," it actually gives you the email address of the Samaritans. So there is a bit of rudimentary AI to it there. So the email address, yeah.
So you can ping them an email and wait for the next day to get a response.
You can send them an email and attach images and send it in HTML format to make them depressed. So, yeah, I don't mind Emacs so much. It's got a huge amount of functionality under there. I've never grown up with it. It's never been my editor, unlike, say, Nano. But it is a beast.
That's the trouble. I mean, I've used Vi for a long time, and I'm no master of Vi, but I can use what I use in Vi without any difficulty, and it's difficult to reprogram all that muscle memory to use Emacs. I did try and use it for configuring, config files, but
I mean, that's saying something coming from an editor where to quit without saving, you have to press !!!
No, Q, you can exclamation mark.
Yeah, Q exclamation mark.
Oh,
you fool.
That's totally normal then, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I know, but get over that. I got over that bump a long time ago.
Right.
I guess I just got used to it. I mean, I know this is a long debate that people have, but it's difficult reprogramming yourself for Emacs.
Well, that means you won, Mike. I didn't use it at all because I became a dad and I wasn't here for 2 weeks. But you win, 2.5 hours.
You'd be teaching your baby Emacs. So.
We've actually been watching Richard II.
Ah.
Derek Jacobi edition from BBC. She quite likes it, I think.
Cool.
She hasn't fallen asleep yet.
Despite your best attempt.
Come on, watching me so boring. No, so that means you win. Well done, Mike. And coming up next in You Dare Us, we'll all be making some music using free software tools commonly available in our distributions.
Great.
Has to be free software. And we'll mix them down to OGG, I guess, presumably, or MIDI if you really want to, I don't know. And we present a work of our awesomeness in about 2 weeks. Possibly.
Cool. I'm going to dig out my old sound tracker.
Discovery of the week, Fortnite. We've been discovering things like mad this Fortnite. Oh,
yes. Unstoppable.
Yeah. Beavering away.
Like a torrent of discoveries. I think chief among the discoverers has been Mike Saunders.
That's me. I discovered Herd NG.
That sounds amazing.
Yes. This preserves the main design goals of the Herd.
Have they already been compromised?
while fixing some of the Herd's shortcomings. For those who don't know, the Herd was the kernel started by the GNU project in 1990 to be the kernel of GNU. And then it never really went anywhere. It was quite ambitious. So Linus Torvalds came along, made the Linux kernel, and it all fit together.
But also, isn't one of the major shortcomings of the Herd the fact that it hasn't really got anywhere? So forking it isn't going to help too much to go back to scratch again.
Well, this is it. You know, the fact they're already looking so far into the future when Herd is...
Yeah.
Herd has a lot of good ideas in it, but it's still barely usable.
Yeah, but it's not so much standing on the shoulder of giants. It's standing on half-built walls that could kind of collapse if you stand on them in the wrong way.
They're trying to build their own giant.
Yeah. Wicker Man.
I don't think there's any code yet, which is a shame, because...
Stage one planning!
Just the manifesto.
That's one of the major flaws.
I really want there to be some code so that I could boot it up and finally usurp Andrew's use of the Herd. I'm using Herd NG. But so I'll report back in 16 years on my use of Herd NG.
Wow, well, it seems like an appropriate time for me to jump in with my discovery.
Cool.
Which is, I tried to install the Debian GNU/Herd last week.
Debian.
Debian. Oui, but it was de mal. It did not work. And that was it.
Oh, no.
My discovery was going to be, I've, you know, installed the Herd, and it's graphical and it's great. And this is the year of the Herd on the desktop, but that's not my discovery.
Where did it fall down? What went wrong?
The installation process is really convoluted.
Right.
It's not like a Linux distribution. It's not like the old text mode Debian installer. Mm-hmm. It's not even like something like a BSD installer.
Right.
It's just its own mad crazy world.
which is
just too much for me.
And it's the Herd, you say?
Yeah.
Amazing.
But I will get there. It'll take me God knows how long. 16 years, possibly.
See you there.
But I want to preserve my elite Herd status. You know?
The race is on.
Yeah.
You're champing at the bit, Graham, aren't you?
I do have a pretty good discovery, but it's not particularly Linux related yet. It does work on
Linux. Neither is the Herd.
It's the best use of Flash I've ever seen. Adobe's Flash.
Is it the Flash Piano?
No, it's called Firestarter. I think Miguel de Caza tweeted it last week. And it's incredible. It is music related. It's a complete retro kind of recording studio with drag and drop synths, really authentic sounding drum machines and effects pedals that you drag from a tool palette on the right into the main editing display, and then you wire up each different component into the amplifier. And also, you can scroll and scale in and out, so you can create this massively complex wired studio. And all of the synths and the drum machines and effects that you add, all of the controls on them really work. And they really work like the originals they're inspired by. And it sounds marvellous. It's called Firestarter.
Is it open source?
No, I don't think so.
Darn.
I know.
I might use that for my You Dare Us.
Well, yeah, no, it's not, unfortunately. But it's incredible. I can't believe it's done in Flash. And it works great on Linux.
Cool.
Yeah. And people, also, the website that hosts it, obviously people save all their songs, and you can collaborate and listen to what other people have done with the same setup. It's really worth trying.
Firestarter, you say?
It's called Firestarter.
Isn't there some sort of firewall program called Firestarter?
GTK
Firewall. Yeah, there is, yeah.
So make sure you install the right one, listeners.
Well, you have to go to the website. I can't remember the URL, but I'll put it in the notes.
It'll be in the notes.
Yeah,
the podcast.
Well, whatever.
We call them notes.
The readme.
And that just leaves Paul Hutton.
I've discovered very much in the last 2 weeks. No, I have, really. I've discovered so many things, I can't cram them all in. So I'm just going to pick the top four. You don't believe me. No, seriously.
Okay.
One, I discovered literally about an hour ago, and it's about Microsoft Bob. Remember Microsoft Bob?
Great piece of software.
Little animated dog.
I remember Bob Moss, who writes for us. Has he been paid to change his name?
Environment from before Windows 95, made by Melinda Gates, which I think is perhaps why it got made in the first place, Bill Gates' wife. And it was designed to revolutionise the graphical user interface of the computers, and it was a little dog that walked around your house to use computers and stuff. It was pretty grim. But interestingly enough, when Windows XP shipped on a CD, it was less than the size of a CD. And back then, downloading, it was 2001 when it came out, back then downloading CDs was quite a lot of data. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to max out the size of the CD. So they filled the extra space with encrypted copies of Bob.
Really?
As a curious Easter egg.
You can't
get it unless you know the encryption key, but it's on there, says Microsoft. They've admitted it, it's on there. But yeah, it's amazing. Just to make it slightly harder for pirates to download Windows XP.
Wow, so that's the most useful thing from Microsoft Bob ever.
it's been distributed about a billion times.
Yeah.
So actually, it was a great success, do you think about it?
It might be the world's most popular piece of software.
That makes Bob more popular than the herd, quite frankly. secondly, it's a discovery just for the readers or listeners to try out. Open up a terminal and type cal:September:1752. The first listener to explain why that happens wins a free book. Post a comment. Thirdly, if you look on Tux Radar a few days ago, we just posted Brain Party for Linux. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's free software. Go and download it. It's awesome. It's at tuxradar.com/brainparty. And finally, the main thing I discovered, which is really, really awesome, is called weakref in Python. I hadn't realized this. I'd written this library called Gloss on Tux Radar again, tuxradar.com/gloss, and it automatically adds sprites for a game to an array.
Okay.
And in Python, if you stop referencing a variable, it gets deleted automatically. But in Gloss, because it was in that array, it wasn't being deleted because Python go, hey, it's still being used, let's not delete it. Lame.
Right.
With a weakref, it doesn't actually add one to the counter. So it's in the array, but Python pretends it's not really in the array. So when it gets deleted from the array automatically as well. Very, very cool. It's called weakref, and it just works. I was amazed. I don't think it exists elsewhere. I haven't seen it in C#. Maybe it's in C#.
I knew you were going to love Python.
Comment poster. I say it's in C#, obviously. But it's in Python, and it works really well. Weakref. And it'll be in the notes as well. Or you can just handle Gloss.
You found something that'll make you love Python now.
I just love it.
Yeah.
Python.
Awesomely, Paul has discovered more things than the rest of us put together.
Suck it down, losers.
Yeah.
And now it's time for In the Hot Seat. This time I have used my Python love to write a Python script that automatically chooses a topic for Mike, or indeed it is Mike's turn this
again
week, to talk about in his 1 minute. So if we just run the script, a little bit of typing away, and hit enter, and it's crashed.
Segmentation fault.
Thanks, Python. Okay, I have to spin the wheel then. Graham, you want to spin the wheel?
Yeah, sure, okay. Ready?
Here we go.
Go, Graham, yeah.
Now.
Oh, it's not Grub. It's packages.
Packages? Right, so I've got 1 minute. I've got to talk without pausing about packages, correct?
Yeah, the kind of ones you get in the mail.
Right. I love getting stuff in the mail. Me. So, who's going to do the timer? Paul, have you got the appropriate timing equipment? And it's not running on the herd. Because otherwise I'll end up talking for 4 hours.
It's on my wrist. I call it a watch.
A watch?
You ready to go? I have the squeaky ball of doom.
Okay.
Ready?
Yep.
Go.
Packages, why? I don't think there's a reason to have packages for desktop software today. Packages make sense for the base system, for things like glibc and libraries and kernel, where you want to update stuff over the internet regularly and files are scattered all over the file system. But why should you have to download packages for your web browser? It should live in its own directory. But people have been doing this for years and years. RISC OS on the old Archimedes, that had applications that lived in single directories and didn't explode files all over your file system. So I think the concept behind packages for desktop software distribution is fundamentally flawed. You have to deal with all these dependencies, and it doesn't mirror real life experience. If I was to go out and buy a music CD, I don't have to get it from some strange repository and then smash it into bits and scatter it all over my house. I simply get it from you or mate or a shop and put it in my drive. So hence why packages are a real holdback, a real throwback from the olden days. So I suggest needs to be a definite split between packages used for the system that no.
Well done, Mike. Well done,
did
Mike.
I win?
I think we all knew where that was going, really, after packages. Why?
So Mike likes packages, then?
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that bit.
If you have any more things you'd like us to answer, is it Andrew's turn next
week?
Andrew's turn next week. Post a comment to the podcast and make it hard for Andrew to try and tackle next week.
So, moving on, the open ballot. There's a new campaign that's growing up on the internet. Some people are trying to get Wikipedia to use Theora video on the Wikipedia website to really try and spread the use of Theora. As we know, at the moment, most video sites use Flash, and hopefully that's on the way out, that binary blob plugin. The currently used alternative is H.264, which is a good video codec, but it's limited to the hilt with patents and copyright issues, stuff like that. So OGG Theora, the free, as in freedom, community video format, that's the one people are trying to push. So we were asking whether this campaign will work, whether Wikipedia putting up more videos in OGG Theora format will really get it out there, because a lot of the time OGG doesn't really stand up. Theora doesn't really stand up against H.264.
Unlike the audio equivalent codec, which you know is much better than MPV. Yeah, yeah.
You know more about that. Yeah, is it been proved to be better?
Actually, I don't think it's been proved. No, but right. I think most people agree that it sounds slightly better.
Better than what?
Better than MP3. Well,
obviously, we know it's better than MP3, but MP3 is many, many moons old.
That's true, yeah. It's surprising, actually, that nothing like H.264 has come along to try and usurp MP3.
Well, I think it's called AAC, isn't it?
Well, yeah, well, OGG Vorbis, I think, bitrate for bitrate, is pretty much on par with AAC, I would say.
Graham Morrison.
Yes, well, it's subjective.
But I think he's the man who would know. So yeah, in some of the comments here, Ray Wood says, if something works well enough at a reasonable cost, people will use it. We must remember the average computer user isn't concerned about free software, DRM and so forth. They want something that works, plain and simple. If Theora isn't fit for purpose, it just won't cut it. What do you reckon, Paul?
I think that explains why so few people are using KDE.
Flame proof soup's on, please.
I don't really mean that. I'm just kidding around.
That was a joke.
Uncross your fingers.
He's absolutely right. But I don't think people think about good or bad. They just click play in a video.
Mm.
It could be better or worse. Because let's face it, YouTube's quality isn't really that awesome anyway.
Yeah.
It has got better in the last few years, fortunately, with the HD push they've been doing. But it's not awesome by any means. They just want to watch videos. And everyone's used the internet video being rubbish. So it could be Theora, it could be H.264, they just want to click play.
I think it's really, really important to have a well-supported open video format on the net. I don't really care what people do with their iPods and stuff they purchase, but for information, like on Wikipedia, stuff that we want to be here in 50 years' time, it's got to be in an open format. So we don't have to...
Why?
If it isn't, then Sony can update the firmware to the internet and don't.
Yes, but think about it. So you've got H.264, which basically every device in the world supports. I don't mean fridges, I mean every electronic player device.
Except every PC running Linux.
Well, it works. The best H.264 stuff is open source. X.264, the encoder, and it's the best one in the world.
Right, I should say it's hard to distribute.
Apart from machines running Linux that could care about patents, which we don't in this continent.
Yeah.
So you've got every decent video player supports H.264, hardly any supports Theora.
Okay.
So in 50 years' time, if you're looking for a device that supports H.264, digging around, you know, in the trash, in the kipple, trying to find some device that supports the video, you're more likely to find a device that supports H.264 than you are Theora.
But do we know that the people behind H.264 are not going to pull something amazing out of the water and say, ah, now you can no longer do this, or now we're going to charge you to do X, Y, or Z? Or...
But who? But the people who license are people like Apple who make these devices.
Yeah, but the people who are giving out the licenses in the first place, they still have control, don't they?
But Apple is on the committee for the H.264.
Right.
They're on the licensing group for H.264.
Yeah.
They help develop H.264. They own some of the patents for H.264. Right. These devices are going to carry on being produced. I think it's terrible it's patented up the hill, don't get me wrong. But I think if you're looking for a chance of a device supporting it, it's going to be H.264 every single time.
So would you say it'd be all right for Wikipedia to put all this video up in H.264 format?
I would rather they didn't, because I don't plan to install H.264 codecs on my Linux box.
I'm just thinking, as a distributor of media, then this licensing committee could come on and say, oh, Wikipedia, you haven't been paying much money for the last few years, now we're going to charge you £20 million.
No fundamental difference to me as a European person between Theora and H.264.
Yeah.
I believe both using patented technologies. Fiora will say otherwise. I think they're wrong, quite frankly. H.264 has all those wonderful technologies. Fiora is copying them fairly closely in 1.1 and also in new releases they're working on.
Yeah.
And maybe they're inventing them from scratch, but it appears to be directly what H.264 is doing.
Yeah.
And if they say, oh, don't worry, Fiora's not painted, who says who? Says which lawyer?
Well, I mean, they're all prone to attack, aren't they? I just wouldn't like to see a situation where Wikipedia had to take down a massive amount of its content because the licensing of the video format it was changed.
They should do the same thing Ziff does, which is store them all in lossless format as well.
And serve them out only.
Serve them out as H.264 if they want to, or serve them out as Theora, serve them out as whatever they choose to. Because right now it's a Java app that plays who knows what it's playing.
It's pretty awful at the moment, isn't it?
It might be Theora, I don't know. But if they ever have to change, they go, okay, let's change. It's not really a problem.
But say, take... what if Fiora didn't have any patent problems? What if it was completely clear? Surely then you've got to admit that Mike's got a point that as an archiving format for something like Wikipedia, which is vitally important, it makes far more sense if you're not going to have 100% quality unadulterated video. You have to archive it in something like Fiora.
You have to archive it in something, absolutely right. But why couldn't that be H.264?
Because... No, I agree with Mike. I'm uncomfortable with the idea that somebody controls the technology that it uses to encode and decode the video data.
But the machines play it out of the box nowadays.
Yeah, I know, but it's the same...
It's only on Linux where it's a problem.
It's the same as storing documents as in Microsoft's doc format.
Well, think about it. So let's say you go, again, 50 years into the future, someone gives you a doc file, and someone gives you an SXW file. Good luck opening
It would be ODT.
ODT is fairly recent in comparison to SXW. That's been around for years before ODT came along.
Yes, but people have realised the advantages of an open format that isn't going to be encumbered by people with other kind of motivations for keeping things closed and continually charging for things.
It's not H.264 isn't a closed format. That's again, what I said.
I know.
You can encrypt it very, very easily. All it is patent encumbered.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop you reading the files.
But it nor is it as free as ODT. Nor is it... What I'm saying is that it should be the video equivalent to an OASIS format for documents, just to kind of guarantee the future of the integrity of the files.
Well, the files will be integral no matter what, aren't they? They don't get bit-rotten videos, do you?
No, I know, and what you're saying is right, but what I'm saying is that using something... That is, it's the same as using doc, it's the same as using GIF, it's the same as using JPEG. You know, it's not an open format. It doesn't guarantee...
JPEG isn't an open format, but it has revolutionised the internet. The fact that every browser supports JPEG means we just rely on them. And if you look out there, yes, there are better formats. You can get JPEG 2000.
Yeah.
Or whatever, there are better formats. It doesn't matter, but JPEG wins because it's the most popular format.
But I think in the instance of Wikipedia, the freedom is more important than the universality of what you can do with
freedom
the format.
Freedom to whom?
The freedom to future generations who are going to use that
generations?
Medium.
Patents don't last that long.
they probably will.
They don't now, but things get extended. Cliff Richard's got copyright extended.
Copyright's different to patents.
But things get extended. Things do. Patents are a thing.
It's out of our control. Extended.
The patents will expire in about 9 years from what I can tell.
I just don't trust it. I'd much rather have it in a format and something that we can trust.
And I really honestly believe if Theora were better and more popular, then it'd be great. But the fact is, you know, if you go to Wikipedia on any other device, if you go to on your iPhone,
yeah,
Wikipedia, you won't be able to see the videos. It will not work. So yeah, you're really restricting what you can do.
There is an argument. Some people say that if a major website like Wikipedia does something, and that would help to spur on adoption. So say hypothetically, Wikipedia and YouTube both switched to Vorbis, and they put really clear links to these codecs download. I bet you'd have millions of people downloading them because people go there and say, well, "By the way, this
switch
doesn't
work." Switch away from H.264, YouTube.
Yeah.
So people would not be able to see the videos.
Yeah, and if there was just a button there saying we've gone to this new better format, click here to do it. I bet people would do it. They wouldn't say, oh, "I'm going to Vimeo now." Everybody would just say, yeah, well, if I just have to press this button. That's how people got Flash in the first place, isn't it?
That's true.
People just...
But Flash is a great example. Flash is everywhere, and Apple still goes, no, screw it, we're not doing Flash.
What I mean is...
And no, everyone's like, yeah, we hate Flash, suddenly.
Yeah, what I mean is, with enough pressure, then people would do it. If Wikipedia and YouTube and many other sites said, oh, by the way, got this new format, just click this button.
And I think it turns these entities into political entities, which is probably the last thing they want to be doing.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think Wikipedia thinks it's its job to try and force users to use free codecs.
Absolutely.
H.264 is technically superior, far more widespread, and admittedly patent incumbent in the US. That's a big problem. I wish Theora was used, but it looks really, really unlikely because so few devices support Theora. So few devices support Vorbis. Vorbis is far better than MP3, I've said already, and it's still not supported. It's terrifyingly bad, and that's not going to change by having, you know, geeks standing around Apple stores.
Yeah, yeah. That wouldn't do it. That's what I mean. There would be ways.
It's not the equivalent to geeks going to Apple stores saying Wikipedia should use Theora.
It's clicking on a button.
Why do you have any choice about Wikipedia's bandwidth, Bill?
That's a very good point. I mean, I was arguing the case regardless of the fact that Theora is significantly worse than H.264. I mean, I think we need a better video codec. I mean, I was terribly disappointed with Dirac, the results in that test, because Dirac seemed like a great hope.
The BBC one?
Yeah, pay the BBC to come up with
Dirac is
still
being developed as Schrodinger.
The Schrodinger bit is coming soon, but...
Yeah. Definitely, it's disappointing. But think about it from Wikipedia's point of view. I think they'd rather say, if we put up today HTML5 with H.264, suddenly every Safari user can see it, every Chrome user can see it, every da-da-da user can see it straight away. Or even better, I know that sounds terrifying, I'd really personally hate this for me, they could say, hey, let's put it up in Flash, and 99% of people can suddenly see it.
That doesn't bear thinking about.
Breadth, and it's day, I know it'd be terrifying Flash, because we know it's a pretty grim format, and definitely close.
Well, a lot of our readers as well have been looking at the technical side of it. Jonathan says, it seems that H.264 can be streamed and give a better image at a lower bitrate than OGG, which in turn is using less bandwidth and costs less. This is probably the reason Google isn't backing an open codec along with most big companies.
Well, there's another issue there. Imagine you're Google and you're running YouTube. How many videos are on YouTube?
20 trillion?
it's probably petabytes of data.
Yeah.
You know, every second... there's a full 24 hours of YouTube video uploaded.
That's just me and my staring videos.
Yeah, as well. It's an insane amount. How the heck are they going to convert that to Theora?
They have them all stored?
We're going to shut down google.com for a month, lad, so we can use the spare service to convert it all to Theora and magic ourselves at 1,000 new hard drives and spare time to do that with.
Well, the other side to this, aside from the politics and aside from just whether or not the codecs are better, is the fact that there are actual hardware decoders for these things as well. So if you're going to decode Vorbis, then you've got to do it in software and in most Theora. Devices in Theora. I mean, yeah. So that immediately gives H.264 a head start.
Keep in mind it's not a head start. That's a head, body, and tail start. That's been over 5 years now. These hardware decodes have been in place.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, Anonymous Penguin, please don't call yourself Anonymous Penguin in future. said when
apart
I
from the real Anonymous Penguin
the one that posts all these messages, this guy was trying out all sorts of stuff on his AMD Semprom box, and he said he wasn't able to get H.264 was a bit crispier than Theora. So if there's any ultimate judgment on the formats, it's probably that.
Yeah,
crispier. Stays crunchy in milk.
H.264, it's sad, but it's got so many huge companies behind it. It is one incredible video format, and I'm sure it'll be superseded in another 5 years by another proprietary, even more patented format.
H.265.
Maybe, yeah. As it went, H.263, 4.5 makes sense.
Yeah.
But right now, it is head and shoulders better than Theora. Theora 1.0, it crunches into pieces. 1.1, Thusnelda, it crunches into slightly bigger pieces, but still crunches it. The next one, I can barely even pronounce its name for Theora. It's called Ptolarvorm. Awesome.
They don't do themselves many favours.
They don't. No, exactly. And that's better again, but still behind H.264, which was made years ago. Well, only now it's even starting to come close to catching up. And it's annoying. And the real problem is software patents. The real problem is software patents. Get rid of them, and we can use the great best format straight away. H.264 everywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
And with such flame war generation, we come to the end of our podcast. Don't forget the notes.
Oh, look at the geekometer here is not ticking quite right. I think this has been a very politically charged episode. So I think we need some general geekiness and facts and stats to round this off. So yeah, let's have a bit of a quiz. How many files are there on
Five.
The system after a fresh Ubuntu 9.10 install? So this is like stuff in proc as well. How many objects in the file system?
8,707.
1,239.
50,000.
Well, I'm telling you from the start, Graham's are considerably closer because the actual number
Dev?
Is
TTY1, TTY2, TTY3.
169,794. That's how many things Ubuntu drops onto your hard drive after an install.
Wow.
So good luck exploring them all.
And then if you've got rid of the Afrikaans language support,
it's only about 200.
And with such curious trivia, we come to the real end of our podcast. Don't forget the notes of the podcast, such as they are, and you keep on complaining, are on the website for you to go and read, and you can try the cal command. I know you really want to.
They're those things just above or below the links, aren't they? The podcast notes.
Yeah, that's what we call them.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got a better name for them, email us. And of course, our email address is paul.hudson@microsoft.com, tuxradar.com.
Yeah. You know the way there.
paul.hudson@futurenet.com. You can email us with feedback and we'll read out the best comments in coming podcasts. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Juice.
It's such a nice day to be.